Okay, so welcome to our last session in this track today. Efficient application of countermeasures for elliptic curve cryptography by Vladimir Sukharov. Vladimir is a cryptographer at InfoSec Global. He's relentlessly focused on cryptographic research and development and is inspired by continuous innovation. He obtained his PhD from the University of Waterloo's David R. Cheriton School of Computer Science, specializing in cryptography, security, and privacy under the supervision of David Zhao. His thesis title was Post-Quantum Elliptic Curve Cryptography. Please join me in welcoming Vadim.
Hello, everyone. So, yep, today I'll be giving a talk on efficient applications, countermeasures for elliptic curve cryptography. That will include optimizations and countermeasures against side-channel attacks. So, what we'll see today is there's going to be a brief introduction, some summary of ECC arithmetic, then we're going to classify our countermeasure types, then we're going to look at optimization techniques and countermeasure techniques, and then there's going to be a summary and conclusion. All right. So a cryptographic algorithm can be mathematically shown to be secure. So we have mathematical proofs where we reduce some cryptographic algorithm to some hard mathematical problem. However, this does not guarantee full practical security. And the reason for that is that there can also be attacks at the physical layer. And the two types of categories of attacks, there's passive attacks and active attacks. Passive attacks, when somebody listens in to the communication that is happening and obtains some information. And active attacks is when data actually gets tampered. So we need to take extra steps and effort to prevent such attacks to provide actual full security. All right, before we go further, because we're talking about elliptic curve cryptography, so we're gonna do a very brief intro to what elliptic curve groups are. So basically, an elliptic curve is a solution to this wire stress form of equation over a finite field. So it's gonna be a finite set of points that satisfy this equation where A and B are also scalars in our finite field, and we add a point infinity to serve as an identity. And if we want to add two elements, we have a specific formula, or geometrically it's going to look like if you have a curve, this blue line, so it's curve over the real, so we are actually working over finite fields, but this is for display purposes. So if we want to add points P and Q, we draw a line through them, it crosses the curve at the third point, we reflect on the x-axis, that's our result. All right. So, one of the major operations that happens when we're using ECC is scalar multiplication. And by scalar multiplication, we mean we take a scalar D and multiply our elliptic curve point P. And that means we're literally adding P to itself D times. And so that's our major operation. That's where most of the security concern happens. So, often this scalar value is your private key, and the resulting Q as a result of D times P is your public key, with P being a global public parameter. So getting D, given only the knowledge of P and Q, needs an elliptic curve discrete logarithm problem to be solved. And this is considered a mathematically hard intractable problem. So we can easily compute D times P to obtain Q, but we cannot obtain D given P and Q. So, now this needs to be implemented efficiently, and one problem is that depending on implementation, D can leak through a side channel attack. So, what are the side channel attacks? So, there are attacks that aim at the physical implementation of cryptosystem and emissions of that implementation. Some examples of side channel attacks is that you can figure out the power consumption of a machine or a processor, you can look at timing. Radio frequency emissions, sound, or anything that gives any physical knowledge of what's happening inside a cell phone, chip, smart card, computer, could actually give away some information of processes happening inside. Now, one of the examples of side-channel attacks is that we have this double and add algorithm when we're computing the scalar multiplication. It's basically, we need to rewrite our secret scalar in binary format. And then we're iterating through those bits. And when the bit of it is zero, we only do a double operation. And when the corresponding bit is one, we need to do double and the add operation. And because double and add have different complexities, and add is more expensive than double, we can actually figure out the value of D. So basically, whenever we see that a certain operation takes more time or more power, this means that must have been a bit 1. When it's less power, it must be the bit 0. And that way, bit by bit, we can figure out the value of the secret scalar D. Okay, now we're going to look at different categories of side channel attacks. First category is simple side channel attacks. Basically, the idea of them is that an adversary observes one operation and figures out some secret information. And as we've already seen, one of the such examples is obtaining the secret value of D, our secret scalar, from the performance of our scalar multiplication. Now, next one is differential side channel attacks. So whenever we're talking about differential side channel attacks, that means that simple side channel attack countermeasures are already assumed to be in place. And so it obtains the information from multiple observed operations, and then it uses statistical methods and to derive the secret information from traces. So one of such examples is operations performed with a static private key. So basically, if we're reusing the same private scalar with different points in the elliptic curve, this would mean multiple usages of the same secret information, and that could help the adversary statistically figure out what the value of D is, or maybe some bits of D. And the third type, and we're again in the category of passive attacks at this point, it's a grouping type attacks. Basically, what's special about them is that they refer to elliptic curve elements that remain unchanged after applying both simple side channel attack countermeasures and differential side channel attack countermeasures. And some examples of such points are whenever we have in our parameters a zero, even if we randomize it and multiply it by some random scalar, zero stays a zero. So those points are being unchanged. And this could actually leak some information that is vital to the implementation. And the last category that we're going to be of the side channel attacks we're going to look at is fault injection. These are passive attacks, and the basic idea of those is that injecting faults to hardware or to software algorithms in order to provoke them to behave abnormally. So basically, whenever there's some information happening, say a signature verification, and the result of a verify operation is going to be either 1, meaning that the signature is valid, 0, signature is invalid, and so if somebody tampers that and applies, say, high voltage to this implementation when it's happening, the bit might be flipped, and therefore we're going to get an incorrect result, either getting 0 instead of 1 or 1 instead of 0, and so on. So it's basically, and this could be used, you can use voltage, power glitches, clock temperature, ultraviolet, lasers, x-rays, anything can be used to try to accomplish this attack. So what's the main purpose of countermeasures? It's to resist simple and differential side channel attacks and fault injection attacks. And it makes the crypto systems truly secure. Now, what we're going to be talking here about, it's going to be all software. So one of the methods to overcome these attacks is to have hardware countermeasures, basically isolate your system so that no radiation or no power consumption can be observed. But we want to rely on software implementation because we don't know in what environment the algorithms will be deployed. And then we're also going to look at optimizations. Before going directly into countermeasures, because usually we want to combine optimizations and countermeasures together. Countermeasures usually tend to slow down the system, optimization to speed it up, but some countermeasures and optimizations actually don't work together. So the optimizations we're going to look at are going to be a fixed point scalar multiplication, variable point scalar multiplication, coordinate selection, and linear combinations. All right, fixed base com method. The basic idea of this method is that you pre-compute some elements. So basically, say you fix a window of size 4, so basically 4 bits, and you compute it, and actually do multiples of 64 bits as well. And whenever you're performing double and add operation, either you double or whenever you need to add, you actually apply your pre-computed values. So this is going to save you some time, but the pre-computations have been done at this point. Here are some results on the curves that we have implemented. So basically, we can get an optimization of up to 3 times faster than the original one without this method. Okay. Now, this method does have some vulnerabilities, side channel attacks. So lookup tables are dangerous because it makes crypto systems vulnerable to cache timing attacks. So whenever somebody's looking up those pre-computed values, we can actually figure out how long it takes them or what happens in the cache, so some of that can be retrieved. So extra precautions need to be done, things like preloading table to cache, and then the table should not be too large, because if the table is considerably large, we can actually, again, there could be some timing attack happening there. Next method is sliding window scalar multiplication. Basically, it combines the NAF. NAF means non-adjacent form. And so instead of binary, we use trinary. It's -1, 0, 1 usually. Method for multiplication with sliding window. We use the window. We precompute these values, so IP. And then these precomputed values can be used along the way once we're computing the scalar multiplication method again. So here we have some variability because we're sort of doing these precomputations right on the fly. Now, whenever this information, the secret must be stored, we shouldn't be applying this method. This is more for public operations. Here are some statistical data. We get a speed up of roughly 10% depending on the curve size. So this, as I mentioned, the sliding window scalar multiplication is vulnerable to side channel attacks. There's no predetermination what element to process next, so it depends on the secret scalar. And so if your secret scalar, if this is the scalar you're multiplying by, must be kept secret, you need to use the deterministic fixed method. This one is not going to be possible to use. Next one is coordinate selection. So if we're talking about curves in wire stress form, and we think of point solutions to it as in terms of x and y, these are called affine points. However, when combining those points, if you recall that formula I gave to combining two points, there's inversions involved. And as we know, for software implementation, finite field arithmetic, inversion is an expensive operation, and it could be as expensive as 100 multiplications. Therefore, we can actually look at other versions. There's things called projective coordinates. And these points are actually have a z value, but then once we're doing a combination of two points, we don't need to do inversion. So it is going to make us have more multiplications and squarings, but this is by only a few of them, but we're going to save one or two inversions, which saves 200 multiplication operations equivalent. And there's Jacobian projective coordinates, which we figured out are the most efficient ones to use for a generic wire stress curve. So how the coordinate selection occurs is that we obtain the module inversion multiplication timings in each prime field that we're talking about for the curves. And then for all coordinate candidates, count the number of additions and doublings and select the representation that has the best inversion to multiplication ratio. So we're looking for the most efficient one, again, replacing our one or two inversion operations with more multiplication operations over the finite field. Okay, so what happens is that we have determined that projective Jacobian are the most efficient for the general case. If we're talking about NIST curves, there's a few other ones that are available because we're fixing ATP -3, but here we're talking about generic case, therefore Jacobian are the most efficient ones. And as I said, we have two major operations, double and add, but we're actually going to be considering a third operation called mixed addition. So double means we just have point P, it's 2 times P, and that's one of our steps. Add means adding 2 points, P plus Q, or the current state of the point plus the original point. And then the mixed addition, it's basically the same thing as add, but we're adding the second point in affine coordinates, and that's totally possible as long as the first one is in Jacobian, second one is in affine. And if you notice, the cost of doubling is 10 field multiplication. Of addition, it's 16 field multiplications. And mixed addition, it's only 11 field multiplications. All right. So now I'm going to talk about a few more optimization techniques. And this is actually something new that we've obtained as a result of research and development in our company. So it's linear combinations. And one of very important linear combinations, whenever we have points P and Q in elliptic curve and we have scalars S and R, we need to compute this scalar multiplication and addition here. So this linear combination S times P plus R times Q. And the common case is that whenever we have a point original and affine, we switch it to a projective. We obtain the scale multiplication result, switch it back to affine, and then we'll go do the same thing for R times Q, and then add the two results. Now, this is not the most efficient. That's what we figured out. The best thing to do is actually look at this in a little bit smarter way, which saves us about 20% running time. So you first take the original point P, you convert it into Jacobian coordinates, and you actually still keep the affine version of P. You don't discard it. Then you convert Q, again, into Jacobian. You don't discard the affine version. Then you compute S times P using Jacobian coordinates, where, of course, you use addition, mixed addition there. You do the same thing for R times Q. Now, without converting them back yet to affine coordinates, because you're getting both of the solutions are in Jacobian projective at this point, you perform Jacobian addition of those two results, and then the final result would be converted to affine coordinates. And this way, you save about 20% from the standard optimized approach. Another important operation, now these linear operations are usually used for signature verification in ECC. So all these operations are public, so we don't need to worry about countermeasures there, but we just care about speed here. So this linear combination of actually doing a scale multiplication, adding a point, and doing another scale multiplication in the result. So an optimized version, what we need to do is convert Q again to Jacobian, keeping the affine version, compute the scale multiplication R times Q, and then we add the results that we obtained. So we add point P to the result, and we are doing that in mixed coordinate addition. Then we convert L to affine, and which saves us the Jacobian saving the Jacobian representation. We don't discard it because we need it for further steps, and then we compute the scale multiplication of S times L. And then the final result, we actually converted to affine. So compared to the standard optimized versions that are being used in practice, this method saves about 10 to 15% running time. All right, so now we're going to go to actual countermeasures. So we're going to look at parameter selections for elliptic curves, constant time implementations, constant time using projective Jacobian coordinates, blinding for wire stress form, blinding for Edwards curves, and preventing fault injection attacks. All right, so what happens with parameter selections? Remember, we had those special Gubin type attacks, so whenever the point there's a zero value in there, this point we can't do much, even when we're trying to blind it, so it's going to be vulnerable to some partial attacks in any case. So, and the only way that these attacks are preventable is actually when you're selecting the curve itself, you want to avoid some of the points. And so the points that you want to avoid is x, 0 and 0, y. So in order to satisfy these conditions, we make sure that our elliptic curve that we obtain has no points of order 2. And that's equivalently saying that x cubed plus ax plus b should be irreducible over the finite field. And to actually have the second condition working, which b should not be a square in f. So basically, if we let x equal to 0 in our wire stress form, we get y squared equals b, so this should have no solutions. So if you satisfy these two conditions, when you're actually picking the elliptic curve you want to use, then you're not going to be vulnerable to Gubin type attacks. All right, so next is constant time implementation. So again, as we said, whenever there's side channel attacks, one of the things, the parameters they use is time. So we want to implement field arithmetic using 64-bit arithmetic and Boolean operations only. And then for constant flow, avoid any conditional carriers and branches. Now, whenever there's a need to make two operations the same, add dummy operations, it is going to make it less efficient, but this is something needed to make sure that you don't, the attacker could not distinguish between different types of operations. And if you have lookup tables, it should be have constant access time, because if you have smaller, bigger table, your lookup time might actually differ. So what are some pitfalls? Well, one of the problems is that sometimes compilers might actually do their own things. So for example, they might think that your code is not most optimal, they might optimize it and provide conditional branches, which again makes the implementation vulnerable to some of the attacks. One of the examples recently is the long multiplication in 64-bit windows exploited in curve 25519 Donna. And again, CPU instructions might not be constant, so you should be careful with these ones, things like Pragma, GCC Optimize. And you should be careful with portability, because actually not all the optimizations are bad. So it's something to actually look out for and make sure that the optimizations that make it vulnerable to side-channel attacks, those ones should be avoided. But the ones that are just making the code more efficient, yes, those are fine. So you need to carefully analyze the ASM output and fix sections if necessary. And you got to be aware of what platforms and compilers need to be supported for your implementation. All right. Next, optimization here. Well, this is like a countermeasures and optimization at the same time. So it's using projective Jacobian coordinates. What we want to do is make those two double and add operations indistinguishable in order to have our double and add algorithm when it's running so the adversary cannot figure out where we have a zero and where we have a one bit. And what we notice is that when you look at projective Jacobian coordinates, whenever you do a double, it needs 10 field multiplications. Now, we're assuming field multiplications and squarings are actually the same. And when we're doing a mixed addition, we need 11 field multiplications. So these differ only by one field arithmetic, by one field multiplication. So whenever we're performing double, we just add one dummy field multiplication in double, and then that would make double and add operations indistinguishable. All right, next thing is blinding. Well, this is something that is needed to overcome, to have actually countermeasures against differential side-channel attacks. And one of the sort of standard approach that happens whenever we're performing D times P, we select a random point, we add it to our original point, and then we perform the scale of multiplication on it. So, and then we subtract the unnecessary part. And this way we obtain the original point, but this notice that this actually makes us do two scalar multiplications, which pretty much doubles the amount of work that we need to do to do one operation. So projective version is better and it's more efficient. We just need to take our point and multiply it by some random scalar that we choose. This would randomize the point, but the end of the day arithmetic is going to give us the same results. And so those blinding techniques are known for wire transforms, but they have not been used for Edwards curves yet. And so here we're going to look at how to use this for Edwards curves. So Edwards curves are special types of elliptic curves, which have these following two formats. Either they're untwisted or twisted. And then what's nice about them is they have a complete formula for addition, so no doubling formula is needed. They have efficient addition formula, and they're used in such crypto systems as you know as Edwards DSA, which is the Edwards curves based digital signature algorithm. And so these are just some arithmetic. We're not going to go into too much details on it. This is how you can actually apply blinding. Instead of making the cost 100% by doing this in standard way, we actually can apply it this way and making the overhead cost anywhere between 10 and 20%. Okay, next thing we're going to talk about is the actual classification. So of countermeasures and optimization when apply, because sometimes when one is asked, well, given all these cryptographic algorithms based on elliptic curves, we want to make sure we have the top security, but we want to optimize, and some optimizations don't work with some countermeasures, or some countermeasures are actually not required in some places. Because when you ask, can you provide countermeasures? Countermeasures have been applied everywhere, and this just slows down the system for no reason. You actually need to apply them in certain points. You don't need to apply them everywhere, because the more countermeasures you apply, the slower the system becomes. So we decided to categorize what are the categories that we need to look at and figure out what countermeasures and optimizations apply where. So first category is scalar multiplication of the generator point by a secret parameter. So generator point is a fixed point, global parameter that is known to everybody, and it's the same, and we're multiplying by secret scalar. Second category, scalar multiplication was generated by a publicly known parameter. So we're multiplying that fixed global parameter by a scalar which is known. It's a public scalar. So for example, when we're doing signature verification. Third category is scalar multiplication of point that is different from our global fixed parameter. So the point is still public, but it's different from the one that we keep on reusing by secret parameter. And the fourth category, same thing, but by a public parameter. So these four categories would actually cover the entire the entire set of possible operation options when you're doing ECC. Okay, so here's a brief summary of what countermeasures are needed, where and what optimizations, how applicable they are. So category one, so when we have the global fixed parameter multiplied by a scale, by a secret scalar. So you definitely need countermeasures against simple side channel attacks, but no countermeasures against differential side channel attacks are needed, because if you're not, the only place where they are needed is when you're using the same secret scalar, but you're using different elliptic curve points. So this only applies to category three. So we only applied it to category three, all the other categories don't require that. Now, category two and four are actually fully public. So although the point would be different from the global generator point, it's still a publicly known point and we're multiplying by a public parameter. Therefore, no countermeasures are needed. Now, whenever we have a fixed point, idea is categories one and two. So because we're using the same point, then we can apply optimizations there. And of course, the more countermeasures we apply, the less optimizations are applicable and vice versa. So first category optimizations are applicable. Second and fourth category, they're highly applicable. And then the third category, they're sort of, there's applicability of them, but you got to look at them specially. So we call it as medium applicability. All right, and the last category I want to talk about is preventing fault injection attacks. So these before have been only done in hardware. So whenever we want to prevent somebody tampering our data, we usually need to shield our machine, our cell phone, our processor, and make sure nobody can tamper this. But as I mentioned, we want the software countermeasures here. And so this is the idea, is the protection for functions that rely on a single bit outputs or a single bit inputs. And so we're going to look at such operations. Is zero, is equal, is unity, is bit set, is a power of two, swap conditional, copy conditional, and in general, elliptic curve, cryptography signature verification. All right, so functions that depend on a single output bit. So we have a function, and we perform it in two variations. And the idea is that the second operation returns the inverse of the first one. So basically, if we give our two functions same input, they should return to us different outputs. That's how we set it up, figure out those functions. And so if the above property does not hold, then the result is invalid. So more simply, say if we give same input to function f1, f2, if they return 1, 0, then that corresponds to the fact that the output was supposed to be 1, and it's valid. Second idea is that if the first function outputs 0, the second one outputs 1, so again, they differ, so therefore it's all valid. That means the information has been tampered. And this corresponds to the value being 0. Now, whenever they return the same value, either 0, 0, or 1, 1, this means it's invalid and we just don't accept it and either redo the operation or just cancel the session. And this is just a quick idea of how we do this. For example, is 0, we compute is 0 in two different ways and then making sure that they return in an appropriate implementation that they would actually return different values on the same input. So these are some example implementations of them. And again, if they're the same, if f1 equals f2, we're going to return error code. Otherwise, we're going to return concatenation f1, f2. And another method of preventing them, again, we're talking about single bit inputs this time. We actually, the operation on the function GI is performed twice. Basically, we give input of the original bit and the inverse of that bit, and it operates on inverted inputs bit of G1. Now, if we have G on two different inputs does not equal, once we do negate two inputs, both G1 and G2 are supposed to return a different value on different inputs. And both operations may be performed in constant time to avoid timing attacks, of course, on cryptographic applications. And if the return values of G1 and G2 are equal, the result is interpreted as valid. If they're not, then it's invalid. So basically now what we're doing is, because we're talking about inputs, we want to give it two different or opposite inputs, bits, and we want to make sure they return to us the same value. If they return to us different values, then we return invalid. That means there's been some tampering happening. And this is just one of the examples. Again, now this is similar idea to the previous example, except we're talking about swap condition, and we're making sure that the input bit has been different to make sure that they return the values that correspond to this setup. And I mean, this can be done for many operations. These are just some examples. I'm not going to go into too much details on them. All right, so we can say a quick summary. So optimizations and countermeasures for ECC have been shown. Basically, active and passive attacks are there, and there's different layers and different levels of countermeasures. There's simple side channel attacks, differential side channel attacks, and certain times we need to prevent only against simple side channel attacks, and certain times we need to only prevent against also differential side channel attacks. And again, as we showed, there's some public operations where we don't need any side channel countermeasures. So again, we're always playing this game of doing a trade-off between efficiency and security. So that's why we want to optimize. That's why we need this categorization and making sure, like, an algorithmic approach to saying where we apply what countermeasures and what optimizations. And so future work, well, there's lots of future work in this area. One of such is applying and or sort of tweaking these ideas and applying them for isogeny-based cryptography. It's basically one of those post-quantum candidates that is based on elliptic curves as well. It's a different idea, a different hard problem that underlies there, but the arithmetic is the same, and it's vulnerable to similar side-channel attacks as the current day's elliptic curve cryptography. Therefore, we can actually take all these techniques and try to adjust and apply them there in a similar way. Okay, thank you. Any questions?
It strikes me that there are probably developers out there that are making use of ECC in products when they're putting things together. And in the absence of any hardware-based countermeasures that are in place for the platform that they're using, are you aware of any publications that would lay out the best practices for implementation of software-based countermeasures? Because I have the feeling that a lot of the folks that would be employing the ECC would have no idea about the potential vulnerabilities or even how to employ the countermeasures.
So there's no single like document that would actually describe these kind of ideas. There's documents that would say, well, there's this attack, these countermeasures, this attack. So they're very sort of discrete and they don't actually follow a logical chain most of the time. So at least I never came across, and I did quite a lot of search on finding a document that would actually summarize it all. And that's why we ended up summarizing and trying to categorize these things. So if you want more details on that, we can definitely have a talk about that, because that's the reason why we ended up trying to put it all together and give sort of a general technique of how to approach these ideas.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's kind of a related question. So in practice out there, in deployed code, are these countermeasures being used or not? And if they are not used, are there other like protocol level countermeasures where you can do the blinding before you get into the protocol or something like that, like for example for RSA, they are well known?
So answering your first question, if they are being used, yes they are, and one example, our company ISG, we do use them. And you know, we actually spend quite a lot of time researching this, making sure that we cover all the gaps and that, you know, none of our implementation is vulnerable to any types of side channel attacks. Now I guess your second question was if we can do some blinding beforehand. Now, again, it depends on what you're looking at. In general, I'd say no. There's no general approach to blind before you actually perform the operations, right? Because if you want to blind and you don't know the point yet, then it's kind of becomes impossible, right? And that's why, again, this is all specific to elliptic curve arithmetic. So if you know more sort of data that you're going to be, say your application is more specific and you know you're going to be using this particular point a lot of times and everything like that, you can actually do some pre-computation some later, but in general, no.
I guess that's the end of the advanced technology track today. I think the networking break is 10 minutes before we go to the panel, which is, I'm not sure where the panel is. It's in your program if you want to know where it is. So, it might be the whole ballroom. Yeah, CD. Okay. Anyway, so there's going to be a 10-minute break. We're going to, and then, so this is the end of all of the tracks. So thank you very much for coming, everyone. And it's been a very successful conference. And stick around for the panel, which will close out the conference. Thank you.